A state university is expected to be an active participant in the affairs of the state. Is UAA succeeding? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. The University of Alaska Anchorage wants more money from the legislature. An investment? Our number is 1-800-478-8255, toll-free. That's 478-TALK. In Anchorage, it's a local call at 550-8422. Email talk@APRN.org. UAA Chancellor Fran Ulmer is our guest today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by the Association of Alaska School Boards, working with school districts statewide to bring innovation to classrooms through digital learning for the 21st century. Information at aasb.org. Support for APRN coverage of Iditarod 2009 comes from Spinard Builders, supplying Devo paints, adding color and life to your home.
Well, it always seems we select a guest sometimes weeks ahead of time, and then something happens on the very day that the guest is due to be on Talk of Alaska that freshens the whole thing up. This happened over and over again. It happened today. The President of the United States gave his education reform speech. Fran Ulmer, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be here.
Well, it's good to have you again.
Thank you.
I was thinking we've had you in so many different roles. I think the first time we had you was a mayor.
We do go way back. That's true. And I have had the honor of wearing a variety of hats in Alaska, and I've enjoyed every one of them, including this one as chancellor.
Oh, yes. This one, I'm sure, is a challenge. Well, the president today said, we know that economic progress and educational achievement have always gone hand in hand in America. Land-grant colleges and public high schools transformed the economy of an industrializing nation. The GI Bill generated a middle class that made America's economy unrivaled in the 20th century. And investments in math and science under President Eisenhower made it possible for Sergey Brin to attend graduate school and found an upstart company called Google that would forever change our world. The source of America's prosperity then has never been merely how ably we accumulate wealth, but how well we educate our people. Now, of course, there's limited money to back this up, but he's issuing a kind of a clarion call for something that I think you also endorse, which is the idea that we need our higher education system desperately to get through the economic transition that we're going through.
Steve, I'm really glad that the president is shining a spotlight on the importance of education and its relationship to the economy. During the 20th century, the United States had the highest high school graduation rate in the industrialized world. We have now fallen to 21st among 27 nations in terms of how many of our young people graduate from high school. This is a national tragedy, and it is unquestionably something that requires leadership at all levels. The president, the governor, mayors, individuals, business leaders to say, we have got to turn this around. It's high school, it's grade school, it's preschool, and it's post-secondary education. If we want to have a strong economy, particularly in this new world, we are going to have to put more of our emphasis and resources and energy into improving our educational system.
Well, the president is calling in his statesmanlike way for more accountability. And he's also saying, you know, the students are going to have to chip in, too. We're going to have more time spent in school. What do you think of that?
I agree. If you look at most other industrialized nations, students do spend more time in school. And that is something that is at least in part a holdover of our agrarian history, that we spend the summer, by and large, grade school and high school, the summer off. Education research shows that students lose a lot of their abilities, particularly in math and science, over that three-month period when, unfortunately, most young people are not engaged in a way that is keeping their educational attainment abilities strong. So I think he's right. The question really is, as a society, how much are we willing to invest in our educational system? And there's no doubt that investment goes hand in hand with accountability and with results. These are things that have to be tied together, or otherwise there isn't going to be the community and political support to make it happen.
Our guest is Fran Ulmer. She's Chancellor of the University of Alaska Anchorage. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, statewide. A local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. Well, for someone who didn't hear the president's speech this morning, you were remarkably tracking with him.
Well, it's a topic that's very, very important. And, of course, those of us at the University of Alaska consider our job front and center to educate Alaska's workforce and Alaska's future leaders. And we do our very best to target our programs in a way that matches up with the workforce needs. So a heavy emphasis here at UAA is in health programs, in engineering, in teaching, in those areas where we know that employers are desperate for well-trained, well-educated, well-prepared workers. And we hear that every single day. We hear it, you know, whether it's nurses or dental hygienists or air traffic controllers, they're begging us to deliver more of our product. And the good news is we've been able to double many of our programs in the last 10 years to particularly accommodate these high-demand job areas.
Well, I want to go back to the workforce question because I think that is probably the main thing we have to discuss here. But first, how about some sports?
Okay, that's fine. Let's do that.
There is something kind of weird going on here where we have a nationally ranked women's college basketball team, and it seems to be the best kept secret in the state.
It is
They're still not
amazing.
Getting that much turnout at their games. Now, some of that you can say, well, you know, the facility, but...
Well, that's changed dramatically in the last few weeks. We've had...
Now that they're losing, you mean?
No. I mean, they won last weekend, big time. We've had capacity crowds over the last couple of months, and partially I want to thank the media for providing the additional information and coverage about our teams. But, you know, yes, the women's basketball team won our championship, and now they move on to the regional tournament in Seattle next weekend. They've had rankings of first in the nation, fifth in the nation, third in the conference. They are at the top of the heap. They're a fabulous group of young women and student athletes, but it's not only our women's basketball team, our really amazing cross-country ski team. Every single one of our skiers qualified for the nationals. That is a first in UAA history. Every single one of them qualified for nationals. Our hockey team, let's remember that they won the Governor's Cup last weekend, beating UAF in two shutout games. There's a lot of great things happening, but you're right. We have a very inadequate facility for the size of our student population and the number of student athletes that we have competing.
Well, I remember the last time we had you on the show, as a matter of fact, I said, well, I see by the map here you want to put it over there by DeBar. And lo and behold, turns out, over by Northern Lights.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's been moved.
Lo and behold, you said at the time, no, I think we need it more over on this area by the hospital. And the new plan has it there.
Yes. Actually, the first site, which would have been across from East High, was very controversial. A lot of people objected for a variety of reasons. Traffic, congestion, proximity to East High, right on top of wetlands, right on top of trails that people used for running, for skis, too far away from the main campus. For a lot of reasons, people objected. So we went through a process of asking people what they thought. I know this is a radical concept, but it's sort of a long tradition here in my head that things turn out better when you actually ask people what they think. So we held a variety of meetings with students, staff, faculty, UMed district neighbors, community councils, you name it. And as a result of that, a new site was selected. And yes, it's over by the hospital. It's next to student housing. So the idea is that it would be convenient for our young people. We have 1,000 beds on campus, that it would be something close to them so that they could use the facility for exercise, because that's an important part of the college experience. It's healthful. And it's also close to where there are some significant other major parking areas that already exist, so that for event nights, there will be spillover parking. Anyway, for a variety of reasons, it is a much better site. And I'm very thrilled that last year, the legislature provided $15 million to do the planning, the designing, and the site prep for that facility. And we are hopeful. I never know exactly when it might happen, but I hope it happens sometime soon that we get the rest of the funding so that we can complete that facility.
Well, it's a little bit of a shocking drawing to see for a neighbor, which we are, to see what's likely to happen over on the other side of the street if the money comes through. I'm wondering if there will be enough trees around the dorms. You know, it's so kind of cute and full of trees right now. Obviously, a bunch of them have to go.
I would have to say, Steve, that I'm just like you. I'm a complete tree lover. But unfortunately, we don't have so much land on the UAA campus that we can keep all the trees without building new buildings. And the site plan does include trying to maintain a nice corridor of trees along Elmore Road so that, you know, you get some screening, and we certainly include that over by housing and where we hope we will have additional housing. So I wouldn't worry much about that. Actually, I think it's going to be a wonderful design. But we have the smallest seating facility. We have about 1,000 seats in our current sports arena, the Wells Fargo Sports Arena, which is the smallest of any of the schools in our conference. And we have the largest student body. We have 15,000 students here on the Anchorage campus at UAA. And we play against teams that have 2,000 student headcount, 3,000 student headcount, and their facilities have 3,500 seats, 2,400 seats. So we are so out of the realm of reality. And it's not just the seats. It's facilities for the student athletes to get exercise, the weight rooms, the locker rooms, the visiting players' locker rooms, the ability for our resident students to have athletic and exercise facilities, and for us to be able to teach physical education teachers. That's part of our mission, part of our School of Education mission. And there isn't facility right now for us to be able to do that. So we're pretty desperate. We hope it happens soon.
Well, if you could just refresh my memory on the numbers there. You say, will this bring us up to national standards in terms of the number of seats versus the number of students?
We will still be under national standards if you look at kind of the average number of seats in the stadiums. So for in our Greater Northwest Athletic Conference, GNAC, the schools that we play with routinely, most of their arena size, it's from 2,500 to 4,300. And we're at 1,100, just to put that into perspective. And as I said, we have the largest enrollment at 15,000. Most of the schools that we play against, everything from Montana State Billings at 5,000 to St. Martin's at 1,000 or Seattle Pacific at 3,800. So they don't have the comparable student body that we do, and that's part of what's driving our need. Wells Fargo was great back in the 70s when it was built, but this campus has grown by leaps and bounds, and our athletic programs have, and unfortunately we have not kept pace in terms of what we need to do for our student-athletes or our students or our community. That's another big piece of this, serving the community needs.
Okay, I want to get back to the workforce issue and also other construction and potential construction on campus, but let's start a few phone calls here. Our guest is Fran Ulmer, Chancellor of the University of Alaska Anchorage, and Pete joins the program from Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Pete.
Yeah, hi, Steve, Fran. Tickled that you could be there, Fran. This is Pete Robertson, Homer. I appreciated that you started off with the serious aspect of this, which got 5 minutes, by the way, about the problems in our schools, and you then got onto the sports thing, and that's what everybody's interested in. I am a UAA graduate. I'm in my 60s now. I did this in my 50s. And I have a lot of comments about the school, but it's not germane to really what needs to be talked about. Our school system works for about 50% of the kids. My son was one of them. He's now working on a PhD. Did extremely well all the way through and is doing very well with what he's doing. You brought up, I think it was Fran said that the 3 months that kids are out of school because of our agrarian culture was that they're not engaged. And I, by God, that's why I called. Kids are not engaged, especially boys. And they're not engaged in the 9 months of school. And I think we have a broken school system. I think that it has been hijacked by the NEA, but it could be any other group. And we need to look back and look at what it takes to engage not the high performers. I was a lucky parent to have a high performer, but the kids that are disengaged and, in fact, at 4 and 5 years old are angry, and we are like a bunch of insane people. We keep throwing money at this thing and doing the same thing. All my life, since the 50s, we've been doing this, and we have the same result. High dropout rates, the employers that say the kids are not ready for the workforce, and we need to rethink it. The latest thing is, well, they, because Europe and Japan believe in making automatons out of their kids, that they maybe should go to school 11 months a year. Well, I'm old-fashioned. I think kids need some time off. I do agree that they need to be engaged, and they might need to make a couple public summer camps that include math and science once a month or once every 6 weeks during the summer to keep those skills going.
Pete, let me tell you, we do have some great summer camps that UAA has initiated for exactly the reason that you mentioned, and that is that a lot of young people, and this is particularly true for a lot of young males, sometimes don't see the relevance of taking math and science to their lives or to what they might want to do in a career field. And so we have started some summer camps, engineering bridging activities that actually allow young people in high school to come on campus and play with the engineering equipment that allows them to see why building things actually needs math, needs science, needs the kind of programs in high school that maybe before they hadn't quite seen the connection between why am I learning this and what use might I put to it.
It works too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. We have a wonderful partnership with Siemens and the Anchorage School District and UAA to do a Diamond High engineering program where students at Diamond High can opt into an engineering program in high school where they build things and they experiment.
So what's the dropout rate in Diamond High that has a great deal of variety in what they can offer the kids, say, is against Homer High School?
Yeah, I have no idea. But the Diamond High Engineering
is that we need to do this at the local level. I think you lose boys, the ones that you lose. I think they're lost by the time they're seven. It's interesting, in the old days in Europe, they started the apprentice programs. They never would take a child before seventh birthday. There's a reason for that, because that's when boys are able to do certain tasks, and their minds and their emotions are just not ready for it beforehand. And I think that we have to rethink this. I was dyslexic as a kid. I now have 230 or 40 hours of college time under my belt. And you know what? The hardest thing for me to conquer was my memory. The memory of things. It took me forever to learn how to spell because I was not a functional reader until I was 11, and that was because I wanted to read technical things, doesn't matter about what, but I had an interest, and that's what caused me to learn to read, not by the look-see method and flashcards, but simply by sounding out words, because my intellect at that time couldn't handle the modern way of teaching reading.
Hey, Pete, you're a very, very thoughtful caller. I think, however, you're kind of talking more about the earlier schooling, and Fran here is a post-secondary, you know, she's a college person, and I'm thinking that maybe we want to turn this, I think these are very good issues you bring up, but maybe we want to turn it to what can the university do to get a better quality of teacher, perhaps, or to help the the K through 12 schools do the things that you think they need to do.
Steve, one of the things that we are doing are these kinds of partnerships like the Diamond High Engineering, which we hope we will be able to put in other high schools as well, like the summer bridging and engineering camps that really allow young people in high school to kind of get hands-on learning experiences and hopefully return to high school with the kind of enthusiasm, more engaged learning. And we are doing something that I think may in the long term be very helpful. We're working with junior high school guidance counselors on something called Career Pathways, which puts into the hands of the people who actually talk with junior high students about career paths. And there's been some amazing research that it is actually in junior high when a lot of young people either check in or check out to particular career fields. We offer about 150 different programs at UAA, everything from engineering, air traffic controllers, pilots, welding, small engine repair, nursing, dental hygienists, x-ray technicians, just a wide array of different things that actually a lot of young people have never even heard of. They've never thought about those as possibilities. So these career pathway tools that we have, which are both one-pagers and soon going to be, I hope, a video game that young people can play, will help them imagine different ways in which they can put the things that they're interested in to work in a way that will get them a job and that will actually get them to stay in school and get them to come to the University of Alaska. So I don't want to have the caller leave without the knowledge that UAA, matter of fact, the whole University of Alaska system, realizes that we have to work in more effective partnerships with K through 12 because they are our customers, so to speak. That high school graduate, when he or she arrives on our campus, if they have some idea of what they might want to do it with their lives, if they've had excellent preparation in high school, if they haven't dropped out, they're much more likely to be productive citizens, and they're much more likely to be good university students. So it's an area of priority for us. So thanks for calling, Pete.
Well, very briefly, the problem is that the teachers need to be retaught, and you need to overhaul the educational system.
All right, Pete, thank you. We'll be back to this issue of what is education reform. Obviously, ever since we started Talk of Alaska, it's been a chronic chronic issue. It's a burning important issue in Alaska, and people always have plenty to say about it all across the state. Let's go to Charles, joins the program from Kodiak. Charles, you're on Talk of Alaska with Fran Ulmer.
Yeah, thank you, Fran. thank you. This is the person with the mistaken identity. You called Cliff about 20 years ago in Seattle.
Okay.
But I think Fran knows what I'm talking about. He always called me Cliff, and it's Charlie. But my question, Fran, is what percent of the university budget is given to sports versus academic, and in that academic I'm including both tech, and who and how is that budget decided?
Well, I can't tell you off the top of my head what the percentage is, but I would say it's very small. It's less than 10%. It is not something that is a large percentage, even though we started out talking about it this morning. We talked about it because Steve wanted to talk about it, which I'm always happy to do. But
it's the neighborhood we're talking about.
It's the neighborhood. But it is small. And your question about who decides, on every campus, there is a budget process where you kind of every single year go through the process of saying, what are our highest priorities? What are our needs? How do we respond to the community, to the employers? What are our fixed costs, and what new program areas are the most important if we are able to obtain additional funding? And that bubbles up through each campus to the level of either UAS, UAA, or UAF chancellors, and then finally to the president and the Board of Regents, which is appointed by the governor, ultimately decides on what the university's budget request to the legislature and the governor will be. So then it goes from the regents to the governor, who then decides whether she wants to include everything that's in the region's request or less or something else, and then the legislature ultimately decides. So it's a complicated process, believe me. But by and large, what we have emphasized in terms of at both UAA and throughout the university system is trying to address workforce shortages. And I would say that the vast majority of new funding that we have received in the last couple of years has been very focused on those areas where there is the highest job demands. And I'll just specifically talk about health, because health is the fastest growing field in Alaska. It's a $5 billion industry. It employs about 30,000 people statewide, many of them in not only in the large communities of Anchorage and Fairbanks and Juneau, but in smaller communities as well. And the health program increase that we have received in terms of funding has enabled us to have not only twice as many nursing slots, we now have 220 young men and women that are admitted in our nursing program. We have twice as many doctor students through our WAMI program, our partnership with the University of Washington. We will have, if the legislature funds this year's budget, twice as many physicians' assistants positions. We have about 4,000 students statewide in health programs at all of our campuses, and we graduate about 1,300 a year in allied health in a wide variety of fields. That is a high priority because it's what our community needs and it's what our employers need. That's how we make budget decisions, basically.
I see. And also one other question, Fran, is there a school of nursing in the near future for the state of Alaska?
We already have one.
We have a school of nursing right here at UAA, and it has a distance program, actually, that has students in Kodiak, in Ketchikan, in Sitka, all around the state. We use distance delivery, we use video conferencing, and then we use practicum. So we've distributed it. The School of Nursing is actually, yes, here at UAA, but it's distributed statewide.
Yeah, Charles.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to thank you, Fran, for all your public service. Excuse me. And I certainly truly appreciate all that you've given to the state of Alaska.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. I want to go back to the sports just a little bit. First off, if you look at the economics of any university has a sports program, they make money off of it, A. And B, there's a sort of an alumni mass that's accumulated to the loyalty of sports that does tend to add to the economic mass of the school later on.
That's true. It's about students, staff, faculty, alumni, and community support. And, you know, not everybody feels that way, but I'll tell you, I went to the University of Wisconsin in Madison. I'm a Badger. And on game day, there were thousands of people that came from every which way to attend those games. And there were definitely people from outside of Madison who came, who added a lot to the economy of Madison on game day. I'll tell you that.
Well, I don't want to run it into the ground, but just the same, when you have a nationally ranked sports team, you know, it would be nice to have enough seats that people could actually watch them, all the people that wanted to.
Yeah, it would. And
it's also, this is a state in which women's basketball is very high profile all over the state. It's mm-hmm. not just in the urban centers. This is a sport that is
played in every village.
Yeah.
Every village that has a high school. You bet.
So in terms of the community engagement, in terms of many of the goals of the university, I really think there's a pretty good argument here.
Well, we have a full range of programs, and, you know, we have a great honors college, for example. We don't often talk about it, even though we're very proud of it. It has accomplished a great deal. It has attracted amazing students. Matter of fact, we've had 3 Truman Scholars at UAA 3 years in a row. There are only 10 universities in the entire United States that can brag and say that they have had 3 Truman Scholars 3 years in a row. That tends not to get the kind of attention, the media attention, or for that matter, the public awareness. Even though I talk about it, it doesn't have quite the same energy that student athletics has. We're just as proud of it, and it is just as important a piece of who we are as an institution, but different people have different interests. That's all I can say.
Fran Ulmer is our guest. It is Talk of Alaska. Fran is Chancellor of the University of Alaska Anchorage. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422 as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP Alaska. BP, where training Alaska's future workforce is a priority. And by the Rasmussen Foundation, partnering with Alaska's nonprofits and people to improve the quality of life throughout our state. Learn more at rasmussen.org.
State universities have a tradition of community engagement. If you come from an agricultural state, you know right away that there's an extension office that comes out of that state university that is helping farmers with all sorts of matters of agriculture and animal husbandry and home economics and so forth. The University of Alaska is our land-grant college. What is it supposed to do? Well, it's still finding its way. As we've seen, they're sort of having to retrofit a university sports program onto it because it wasn't really built for it. It's just come around to it now. It didn't used to have dormitories. The university is, I'd say if you last looked at it, maybe even just 10 years ago, and then came back and looked at it now, you'd say, whoa, where'd all these buildings come from? They're springing up like mushrooms.
You have got a new science building. The UAA, it started, of course, as a community college. That's really what it started with, a community college and a small four-year program. And in 1954, I believe it was 54, we graduated our first one and only graduate. Last year, we graduated 2,000 young men and women at UAA. We now have the largest number of masters graduating from UAA. So we have, you know, a wide range of things. Everything from the traditional community college mission is still here, as well as a very strong four-year program in engineering, in education, in healthcare, in College of Arts and Sciences, as well as a master's degree program. So yes, you're right. We have grown over time, and largely in response to the fact that Anchorage has grown and the South Central region has grown, and we have attempted to meet the needs. UAA also has campuses in Kodiak and Kenai and Homer and Eagle River and Mat-Su and Prince William Sound Community Campus over in Valdez. So UAA also has this broader South Central mission, and we try very hard to respond to, back to your point about universities are supposed to be responsive to the needs of the place, to respond to those needs in the communities, because many people want to stay where they are. They don't want to have to move. And if we're able, through distance delivery and through very specific targeted programs in a variety of communities, we're serving our mission better.
Well, I realize this is not a UAA matter, but there is a controversy that was going on for a while about the Sea Grant program of Professor Steiner and his right to speak freely and to be an agent in the community in advocating for the marine conservation issues that he believes in. I know this is not your school, it's not your province, but I wonder if you want to make any comments about the responsibility in terms of academic freedom of a land-grant college.
Well, it is true that that professor works for UAF, and so I really don't know the details either of his grant or anything more than I read in the newspaper. So I'm sort of not really in a position to say anything other than generally that the university supports free speech. Mark Hamilton, a few years ago, the president of the university, wrote a wonderful letter when there was a controversy on the UAA campus about freedom of speech and what faculty could do and couldn't do, wrote a great letter about how important it is that universities not only assure that level, but actually promote the level of freedom of speech that not only enables students, staff, and faculty, but the community at large to be a place where people can learn from each other. Now, that doesn't mean irrespectful speech or speech that is not based on thoughtful and hopefully data-based research, particularly if someone is speaking within their realm of expertise. Hopefully it is responsible speech. But our position continues to be that that is an important part of a university's core value and core mission.
Well, we had somebody that wanted to quibble with your numbers here, Tom. She said, Fran said Montana State had an enrollment of 3,500, but MSU Bozeman has a FTE of full-time equivalent of 9,500. She uses the headcount of 15,000 for UAA, but what is UAA's FTE? Wow.
I was not talking about the same MSU. I'm talking about MSU Billings, which is the school with that we compete with. That's the school that's in GNAC. And MSU Billings student headcount is 4,912, to be exact. I don't know about other MSU locations.
Okay, but, yeah, and Tom intercepted that one and said, well, yeah, but their FTE is 3,500.
Well, that's fine, except when you're talking about student headcount, that's actually the number of students that we consider relevant to the question of how many students might want to attend a game or sit down in a building or, for that matter,
i.e. each person
get exercise.
Along with having a head, probably also possesses a posterior.
Yeah, so we could use FTEs. This morning, what I have, I have the student headcount numbers. I don't have the FTE numbers, but the student headcount number comparable for MSU Billings is 4,912, and it's over 15,000 here at UAA.
All right. Well, thanks. Fran Ulmer is our guest, and she's showing that she's got an academic background. Let's go to Marilyn. Joins the program from Petersburg. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Marilyn.
Hi. Thank you for taking questions, Fran.
Good morning.
I wanted to ask about the Alaska Scholars Program. And I'm sure that you're aware of it, where the Alaska Scholars Program is offered to the top 10% of any graduating class for the high school in high schools in the state of Alaska.
It's a great program, and it has made a huge difference, not only in terms of enabling young men and women to go to a university, but also it has encouraged them to choose the University of Alaska. And that means that we are retaining more of our brightest and best right here in Alaska. We know that about 80% of our University of Alaska graduates stay in Alaska after they graduate. And as you may recall, there was quite a bit of concern about 10 years ago about the brain drain, about our young people leaving the state. And that was part of why the Alaska Scholars Program was actually proposed. The idea was, let's get them to stay here, get a good education here, and then work and be part of our economy, part of our communities. And that has worked incredibly well. We now are retaining about overall statewide about 60% of the young men and women who graduate from high school in Alaska choose the University of Alaska and stay here. That used to be about 40%. So there's been a big switch in the percentage of college-bound high school graduates who have chosen to stay in the university system here in Alaska. But it's not only because of the Alaska Scholars Program. I think it's also because we have been able to expand these high-demand areas like healthcare, like engineering, like workforce training programs that are relevant to the jobs where people want to stay and live in Alaska. So it's been a variety of things, but I agree with you. The Alaska Scholars Program, the top 10% of all high school graduates being enabled to stay and go to the University of Alaska, has been great for this state.
Right. I do have a concern about it, though, and that's why I was calling. I have a question or to ask something. Like in a town the size of Petersburg, we have graduating classes size between the largest was like 56 in the last few years, and now we're down to like 44. So that means we have five kids that are offered the Alaska Scholar Program. In my oldest daughter's class, of those five kids, one took the offer. So the other four offers were, I don't know where they went. They went away. And my question, and then, okay, in my daughter's class that's graduating now, there's 44 kids. So that means four kids were offered the Alaska Scholars Program. And I know one of them is not accepting it. So my question is that usually in the top 10 kids of any class, they're within like a hundredth of a point of each other. Have you given any thought to when one of the kids refuses it, that you drop down to the next four-point kid that maybe had a B-plus once or something? Has that been any considered at all?
I don't know if that has ever been seriously considered by the regents as a way of modifying the program. I think it has value. I think that concept has value, and I would certainly be interested in having some discussion about that. I will follow up with you. If you want to leave your phone number after the program, I'd be happy to do so.
Okay.
I think that you're right. If our main goal is to have wonderful students stay here in Alaska, expanding that and making sure that more young people have that opportunity is
right.
Something that is consistent with what we're trying to achieve.
Right, because sometimes in Petersburg anyway, we have four kids that are valedictorians. So there goes the top spots. And like I say, if only one chooses it, then that money is gone and nobody else is offered that here.
Yeah, I apologize. Having only been chancellor for 2 years, there's a lot that I don't know about the history of many of these programs. And I will do some research,
okay.
See if it's been discussed, and follow up with you.
Okay, thank you so much, Fran.
Okay, thanks for your call from Petersburg. Now let's go to the Parks Highway where John joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, John, with Fran Omer.
Hey, thanks a lot for taking my call. How are you, Ms. Omer?
Great, thanks. How are you?
Governor Omer.
Thank you.
You know, I'm a 1990 graduate of UAS, and I have a Bachelor of Science in Geology. And I was very happy to hear you just say a few moments ago that you agree that people don't want to move. You know, a college education regularly exceeds the rate of increase of a cost of in the cost of a college education exceeds the rate of inflation. And I think that so there is a economic as well as other reasons why people really want to try to take classes close to home. And I think that the University of Alaska system is seriously deficient in its lack of petroleum engineering program instruction in Anchorage. You know, there's a huge rivalry that goes on. As a graduate of UAF, I grew up in Anchorage, but I graduated from UAF. I graduated because they didn't have a geology program at UAA. You do now. I commend UAA on that. But I remember as a RAF guide, I had General Hamilton and the president of ARCO, Kevin Myers, in my raft. And I asked General Hamilton, why aren't there any petroleum engineering programs in Anchorage where the oil companies are, where the people are? And I remember seeing the smile on Kevin Myers' face. And I remember looking at General Hamilton and Kevin Myers and saying, you know, I'm sure if you had a petroleum engineering program here that the good folks at ARCO would create internship opportunities. Right, Mr. Meyer? And he just continued to smile. But this deficiency has never been addressed. What can you do to change it?
Well, thanks for calling, and particularly to focus on engineering, which is a high priority of both UAA, UAF, the whole university system, and mine personally. And I'll tell you why. Because we live in a natural resources development state. And in a state like ours, given what our economy is today and what it's likely to be in the future, whether it's a gas line or whether it's renewable energy, we need engineers to make it happen. And I'm not just talking about petroleum engineers. I'm talking about the whole array of engineers and related sciences. So we need to grow our engineering programs, and I think we need to grow them at UAA as well as at UAF. The good news is the regents have set a goal of doubling the number of engineering students that we would, as a combination, UAA and UAF, to go from 100 to 200. And that's good because it recognizes the fact that we are in need of more engineers. We're in desperate need of more engineers. We find a lot of engineering firms, oil and gas industry, the Corps of Engineers, DOT, et cetera, having to hire engineers from outside instead of growing our own engineers. This does not make sense. So we have asked for a new building at UAA because we are way short of space. And there's a $25 million request to the legislature for planning and design money for new facilities for UAA and UAF to grow our engineering programs. We have doubled the number of engineering majors at UAA in the last 5 years. So there's been a huge increase. We've had about a 20% per year increase, whether you look at student credit hours, FTEs, or majors. We are growing like crazy. Why? Because as you point out in your question, a lot of the jobs are here in Anchorage, and a lot of the employers want to provide not only internships, but also they want to get young people who are in our programs working for them while they're still in school so that when they graduate, they're actually more likely to stay with that company. It's a very competitive field. There is a natural synergy. And as I said, the good news is we are expanding our programs. The good news is we are asking the legislature this year to enable us to build out because we're way short of space, not only in lab space and classroom space, but I don't know whether we'll ever do petroleum engineering here, but I do believe that as we have grown our bachelor's of science in engineering, which has tracks, various tracks, it enables us to grow the kind of engineers that are going to have a variety of work opportunities in their career. And that's good for Alaska. It's good for them. It's good for the business. It's good for natural resources development. And, continue to talk to your elected officials as well as community leaders about supporting this idea. It's very important to the future of Alaska.
Can I offer a follow-up comment?
Go ahead, John.
I appreciate it. You know, that's a zinger question. I mean, it's a gotcha question, and I think you handled it pretty well. But what you've really got is you've got a political machine in Fairbanks that will fight tooth and nail to keep every program that they can up there, not necessarily for the benefit of the student body of Alaska, but for the benefit of the economy of Fairbanks. And I'm not sure that's part of the university's mission. You know, you need to go down to the University of Oklahoma and walk through that energy building and understand that the kids – you know, the bottom line is that the people from Anchorage really don't want to go to school in Fairbanks. And I think that we are having a serious brain drain by not offering petroleum engineering, specifically petroleum engineering programs in the state that produces a good chunk of America's oil. I just think it's such an incredible deficiency that's held hostage by the political machinations of the Fairbanks campus, and you got to step in and address it. It's going to be a knife fight.
Well, John, I got to call a halt to that just out of fairness, because we don't have anybody from Fairbanks to address that or to answer for that. And, so it's kind of – we can just rag on them all we want to.
Let me just say that I hear what you're saying, and I'm doing my best to grow the programs to meet student needs here because there is no doubt that there is a lot of community support and there are a lot of economic reasons for us to grow our engineering programs here, and we will do our best to try to make that happen.
John, I want to thank you for your call and for your anecdote about the rafting, too. That was terrific. It's Talk of Alaska with Fran Omer, and Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century, member FDIC, equal housing lender, and by TelAlaska, a telecommunications company proud to support public broadcasting, sharing the spirit of communications across the Great Land. Voice data and Wi-Fi technologies at TelAlaska, on the web at telalaska.com.
We've been watching buildings go up here on the campus for a while, and one of them is a new science building. And now I see that there's a request into the legislature from the University of Alaska for the money to run it. Now, Fran Omer, why in the world would you build a building if you didn't have the money to staff it?
There's a long tradition in Alaska that when the legislature funds the construction of a building, that it is implied that once it opens, that they will fund the operating costs. I know that has happened many, many times, whether it's in the university or whether it's within state agencies. And it has been certainly part of everybody's plan that I know of, that once the Integrated Sciences Building opened, and it's supposed to open in the fall of this year, that there would be sufficient operating funds to do so. We have asked for the $2.1 million to open and operate this facility. The governor included $1 million of the $2.1 that we asked for in her request to the legislature. And I am hopeful that before the end of the legislative session, we will, in fact, get the necessary funding for the heat and the light, the utilities, the running the labs, for being able to provide the education that our students really need. But right now, as of at least yesterday afternoon, there's only one quarter of the money needed. The House Finance Committee yesterday adopted an amendment for $500,000, which, as I said, is one-fourth of what is needed to open and operate it. And I'm doing my best to explain to legislators that it does cost money to open new buildings, and particularly this science building is so important to all the things we were just talking about. Because whether you're an engineering student or a nursing student or a doctor, whatever, or just a general education, you have to take science classes. And we want you to be working in state-of-the-art labs. And it's a very important part of our health mission to be able to attract NIH competitive funding for health research. We now have the physical lab space, but we need the funds to operate those labs. And hopefully the legislature will do the right thing and provide the $2.1 million to do so.
Maybe you can subtract the planetarium and put that on later, and then it'll take some money out of the...
You know, there are, I suppose, lots of possibilities, but not a lot of them practical.
We got a comment from MA who says, UAS, University of Alaska Southeast, is also involved in trying to increase the number of engineering graduates from the University of Alaska. Lots of mention of UAA and UAF and UA, but please don't ignore UAS's efforts to grow local engineering talent in Southeast. Plenty of engineering jobs here.
It's true. And actually, UAS and UAA have worked out a program where actually UAF as well, where students at UAS can take the first couple of years of what they will need to ultimately become an engineer. It's also true that even though I'm here this morning primarily talking about UAA, I do want to say that our entire campus system, University of Alaska Fairbanks, University of Alaska Southeast, University of Alaska Anchorage, are part of one large system. We all report to the same Board of Regents and President and statewide structure. And to the extent we possibly can, we make our programs available statewide. It isn't possible for every program to be available statewide, but many of them are, and many of them are through distance. We have really ramped up the distance delivery. But for things like science labs, there's a lot of hands-on learning that has to take place. It's not just what you can read about. It's doing it. And that's why these labs and the Integrated Sciences Building, the ConocoPhillips company stepped forward and provided the funding for us to be able to complete the building with necessary facility improvements, and that's primarily the lab equipment. And we very much appreciated the contribution from ConocoPhillips, which made it possible for us to do state-of-the-art lab technology. But now we need the operating funds, and I am hopeful that the legislature will do the right thing.
Tradition. It's tradition. That was your answer. We've always done it this way.
Well, I mean, doesn't it make sense to you that when you agree to build a building, recognizing that that's an important part of the university, that you have the funding to operate
it? I guess. Do you think when I first came to Alaska in 82, the rivalry between campuses was enormous. It seems to me that it has diminished. Maybe it's just gone under the surface. In our last two callers back is right. But I'd like to think that it's not quite as acrimonious as it once was.
I think that is true. I think that there is much more of a sense that we are in it together. And I think that the fact that John Pugh, who's the chancellor of UAS, and Brian Rogers, who's the chancellor at UAF, and I have known each other for 30 years. We have been friends for years. Really helps create a climate in which the three of us are trying our best to work together. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't going to be some rivalries. I mean, particularly in athletics, it's natural. It doesn't mean that there isn't going to be competition for resources, particularly when there's program expansion going on and people sometimes end up feeling threatened by that. I don't think you can ignore it, and I don't think you should gloss over it, but I think the reality is that we are all in this together. Our common mission is to help Alaskans get a great education so that they can get great jobs and so that they can contribute to their communities in a variety of productive ways. That's our shared mission, and it's something that we believe in and we'll do our best to achieve.
So you're not going to – I mean, for instance, you didn't respond to our caller from the Parks Highway saying, yes, we want to have our own engineering department. You kind of implied, I mean, we want to have our own geology department. You kind of implied, well, the geology people are still going to have to go to Fairbanks.
Well, no, we have geology and we have engineering. We've actually had engineering for many, many years. He was specifically talking about petroleum engineering.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of nuances in that. There's a lot of, you know, we already have more engineering students at UAA than at UAF. I mean, but UAF has had a program and a strong program for years, and it always will. And we're going to serve slightly different students, it's true. I mean, there will be people who will choose where they want to go based on program. There'll be people who choose where they want to go based on which community they feel comfortable in or where they have friends or relatives or whatever. We want to continue to provide those choices. But we also want to build on the natural synergies with our local communities. And the caller was right. We have a lot of most of the headquarters of most of the big oil and gas and energy companies and engineering companies, they are here. They're within a 4-mile radius of UAA. And so there are some natural partnerships there, and we're building on them.
Well, I did talk to one student at the Alaska Native Science and Engineering program, and he's actually interning over at BP. So
the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, which is one of our tremendous successes in terms of reaching out to young people while they're still in high school to get them interested in science and math. And this happens in villages all over Alaska. I want to really credit Herb Schroeder, who had the vision of being able to achieve what other people didn't think was possible, which is getting a lot of young men and women, particularly from the villages, particularly Alaska Native students who perhaps had never imagined themselves as engineers, to get them here to feel comfortable. And since 2001, we've graduated 200 young Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program graduates that come from, you know, all over the state. And they are now working in, BP, ConocoPhillips, Shell. They're working for the Native corporations. They're working all over the state. We're very proud of that program and believe that it's contributing in a very positive way to the future of the state.
All right. Well, we got like at least 7 more calls here, but we've run out of time. This is another one of those shows where we wish you had another hour. But
thank you so much, Steve.
I know you came in here with a little bit of a cold, and it's been getting worse. I think you hung in there pretty well, Fran.
Thanks for the opportunity to talk about the University of Alaska.
Okay, maybe we'll do Fairbanks next time around. Fran Omer was our guest today. Gooseberry Peters, our engineer. Lynn Anderson on the phone. Our vice president for media production is Duncan Moon. And I'm Steve Heimel. Thank you for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by Techcominco, creating jobs for Alaskans at the Red Dog and Pogo Mines. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.